We are Vineyard.
Somos Viña.
We are Vineyard.
I can honestly say that my life of prayer and oneness with God, my marriage and my parenting, my relationship with the most conflicted relationship in my life, which is my father, all of those things have been dramatically affected in a profound way because of my journey with Emotionally Healthy Discipleship.
Yeah.
And so, and in many ways, I actually, and I tell Pete this all the time, because I was on staff for 10 years with New Life.
Yeah.
Then I left. And it was after I left and became a lead pastor that I appreciated it even more. And I didn't even know that I would appreciate it even more. I thought, I've got everything I could from this place.
Right.
I'm ready to do this on my own. And it was really the move from when I was the second chair, where everybody loved me, thought I should be doing way more ministry, been preaching more and all this stuff.
Totally.
And in some ways, I probably believed some of that hype.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, when I was thrust into a leadership role as a church planter, and I started to feel the pangs of just leadership, all the expectations people had, the pressure financially, the criticism, and trying to figure out what to do with all that criticism.
Yeah.
Some of my deepest insecurities were often triggered in that role.
Welcome to the We Are Vineyard podcast, conversations to help us grow with Jesus and each other. This season, we have a number of incredible guests lined up for you, and we're excited to let you know that this season's episodes will also be available as videos. So subscribe on YouTube so you never miss an episode. On today's episode, Jay talks with Drew Hyun. Drew is a pastor and the founder of Hope Church NYC and the president of Emotionally Healthy Discipleship. Let's listen in.
Drew, thank you for joining me.
Jay, what a joy.
This is the part I hate the most, because we've been talking for 15 minutes and we have to act like we just started talking. But here we are talking nonetheless. Okay. And we're in LA.
Yes.
I was just with you in New York.
Yeah.
Which is where you live.
Yeah.
You had invited me out. I got to spend time with some of your churches, which I love.
Oh, you were such a tremendous gift for us. Thank you for coming.
Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, it was great. And then you're here. We're on the other coast.
Yeah.
Which makes us sound way more glamorous than we are. but we're here at the Practicing the Way conference. You just spoke this morning, did an incredible job, by the way. I already told you that. And I would just love to dive in a little bit more on all the emotionally healthy discipleship stuff. So you have a title now. Are you the president?
I'm the president of the organization.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a cool. I mean, you could be director. You could be.
I could be, yeah.
But president.
Yeah.
Okay. How long have you been in that role?
So the official handoff happened October 15th, 2025.
Okay.
So it's just been a few months here.
Just a few months?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like new.
Yeah.
But you've been in the world for a long time.
Yes.
I mean, decades?
Yeah. Yeah, now. Well, I mean, I joined as an intern with Pete Scazzera in 2001.
Yeah, okay.
So from 2001 until now, I've been very close with him. I mean, we did have a little bit of a hiatus when we were both kind of mad at each other for a little bit, but but otherwise, yeah, I've been journeying with Pete for quite a bit.
Wow. And so I know some of your story. We've talked about your story a bit.
Yeah.
But tell me a little bit about what is the sort of scope and breadth? Like what made you say, yeah, I want to be the president of this. Here's why I have hope for what this does. Because you also lead a local church. You also do city stuff.
Yeah.
You also, I don't even know all the things you do at this point. What is this thing? I mean, there's books, I guess, there's classes, but how would you describe what it is that made you want to step in this role?
Yeah, I mean, I would say because it's changed my life, like radically transformed my life.
Mm.
I can honestly say that my life of prayer and oneness with God, my marriage and my parenting, my relationship with the most conflicted relationship in my life, which is my father, all of those things have been dramatically affected in a profound way because of my journey with Emotionally Healthy Discipleship.
Yeah.
And so, and in many ways, I actually, and I tell Pete this all the time, because I was on staff for 10 years with New Life.
Yeah.
Then I left. And it was after I left and became a lead pastor that I appreciated it even more. And I didn't even know that I would appreciate it even more. I thought, I've got everything I could from this place.
Right.
I'm ready to do this on my own. And it was really the move from when I was the second chair, where everybody loved me, thought I should be doing way more ministry, been preaching more and all this stuff.
Totally.
And in some ways, I probably believed some of that hype. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, when I was thrust into a leadership role as a church planter, and I started to feel the pangs of just leadership.
Mm-hmm.
All the expectations people had, the pressure financially, the criticism, and trying to figure out what to do with all that criticism.
Yeah.
Some of my deepest insecurities were often triggered in that role.
Yep.
So I think my foray into becoming a lead pastor was so painful that I ended up going back to Pete regularly and saying, Pete, I'm really sorry.
Yeah. I didn't know what I didn't know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I think that ended up leading to when our relationship really started to come together more. And because what I had witnessed at New Life was that Pete and Jerry, they were disproportionately involved in discipleship in a deeper way with a select group of people throughout their ministry. So every year they would have a group of people that they would invest in the basement. You know, it was kind of like this legendary basement that kind of like they would be doing work around emotional health and contemplative spirituality. Mm. That experience transformed my life. And so when Pete and Jerry, when they left New Life or they transitioned New Life to Rich for Lotus, and then they were working with, you know, they were pioneering emotional healthy discipleship and they were creating resources. But I could see that, you know, as I was around them, I could see that they really missed the basement.
Mm.
And so what happened was when we would be talking, I would say, Pete, you know, there's a group of pastors around the world that would love to be around you and Jerry. And he and Jerry were like, really? Why would they want to spend time with us? Like, we're not, you know. And I'd be like, Pete, I'm telling you, if we did something, like people would want to learn from you.
Yep.
And so what happened was we ended up piloting a small group of pastors and leaders in New York City. So like Jordan and Jessica Rice, Rich and Rosie, Tina and I, actually Tyler and his wife were part of that as well.
Really?
Yeah. So there were, and we all spent a few months together, and we maybe met like five times. And then one time we actually put together we invited different pastors and leaders from around the country, maybe about, I don't know, 25 or so. So 25 couples that all came in for a Friday night, Saturday experience with the Scazzeros. And I could see Pete and Jerry come to life.
Yeah.
Like, cause they were now involved in pastors and leaders, their lives, serving as like meaningful mentors to them. And a lot of that was just birthed out of like, Pete, Jerry, I know that you guys do this thing really well. Like, would you be open to doing this with some young pastors who would really benefit from it?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, sure. And then I could see them come to life. And I was just doing this as like, I had no official role with EHD or anything.
Right.
I was just like, I'm like, Pete, this has changed my life. I want it to help change other people's lives.
Yeah.
And so as we're in this journey, we were supposed to host another group from around the country that were going to come in April of 2020.
Mm.
But of course, COVID hits.
Yep.
And then from there, we ended up like Pete and I are talking quite a bit. There's a number of people reaching out to him about how can you help with the mental health crisis of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete and I said, Pete, I think we can bring a team around you to help start what's now become the School of Emotional Healthy Leadership.
Yep.
And so I was just as a volunteer, constantly just around Pete and Jerry as this kind of boots on the ground, who was in ministry, who was helping serve them and pioneering new venues by which we could serve pastors and leaders. And so that ended up leading to the birth of what's now the School of Emotional Healthy Leadership. Mm-hmm. And then after that, there was a group of people that are like, we want to go deeper. And so we said, well, we can put together these cohorts.
Right.
And so these cohorts were hosted in New York City, as well as, well, they were all in New York City. And we would invite a group of 10 couples to come to New York four times a year over 18 months. Mm. And that ended up being deeply transformational. Mm. Well, it was three times in New York and one time in Michigan. And then so a lot of it was just me being around them and wanting right. people to experience a transformation that I had experienced.
Yeah.
And now here I am as president. So
and just building like,
yeah,
because there's all the curriculum from writing.
Yep.
But then it's building different mechanisms by which you can get that done.
Yes.
Gare and I were just talking about how we were on one of those Zooms.
Yeah.
We were in Jerry's cohort together. So, you know, and that was COVID because the Zoom world was the only world in COVID. And so you kind of keep working, building all this curriculum material, keep working the things. Tell me about, like, what I find amazing about the work you're doing is the breadth of even the body of Christ, the different kind of leaders. Some of the Zooms I've been on, people are in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
In a world where things are so pluralistic and it's like, well, how do we make sure we bridge between these different racial gaps or ethnic gaps or socioeconomic gaps? How do you think emotionally healthy discipleship and leadership and all the worlds you're building, how is that effective at bridging all those gaps? So, you know, many ministries, it's like, again, at the risk of stereotyping, this is a suburban white kind of thing, or this is an urban black thing, or this is kind of an Asian or Korean thing, you know, like, and I'm not saying that a bad way.
Yeah.
But the kind of bridging doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
What I found fascinating in the work you're doing is it's bridging a lot of gaps.
Yeah.
How do you make sense of that?
Well, I think it has to do with the origin of emotional healthy discipleship. Hmm. Because most people may be unaware, but New Life Fellowship, it was truly an international and multicultural church community. And what I mean by that is it was more than 70 nationalities and ethnicities. However, it was like people with do-rags and saris worshiping side by side.
Wow.
So it was a uniquely diverse community, and majority were foreign born.
Well, and that's partly the city, right?
Yes, I mean, you know, especially Queens.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So because of that, I think Pete and Jerry also had this very strong cross-cultural kind of manner to them. Mm-hmm. But a big value of emotionally healthy discipleship is this, you know, a principle of alone together, you know, which Bonhoeffer talks about, but it also the Quaker tradition.
Yep.
And Pete himself had been such a broadly kind of formed person. He'd been deeply formed by, for instance, Gordon Conwell, where he went to seminary, InterVarsity, which has a strong kind of evangelical disposition, deeply committed CCDA, Mercy and Justice, the Charismatic Stream, the Vineyard, and was also deeply formative of EHD. And so New Life Fellowship was this conglomeration of all these values, these streams that came. I remember Richard Foster's book, Streams of Living Water. That was one of the first books that we were encouraged to read. And so New Life as this international community was bringing together all these various streams. But I think that emotionally healthy discipleship and the language of emotionally healthy discipleship ended up unlocking a certain level of unity and diversity.
Yeah.
That has allowed it to be contextual to various different places. So for instance, like when it came to race and ethnicity, even Pete, for instance, he's a white man who grew up in New Jersey. But when he gets into his genogram, he talks about his Italian roots, the history of the factors of his Italian roots. And his story is so personal and it relates to his family and the pain and brokenness of his family. But that's something when we do the genogram that relates to any kind of culture.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then the confrontation of for each one of us is, I don't know if confrontation is the right word, but like every single culture and family of origin has its cracks.
Yeah. Strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so whatever yours are,
yep,
the invitation is to be part of the new family of Jesus,
yep,
who lives out Ephesians 4. And so I think that kind of language has helped. And I think, yeah, because of that, like a lot of the folks that, I remember the early days of us pioneering emotional healthy discipleship, you know, on our staff even, there was a guy from Maine, a woman from Colombia, an African-American woman from Jamaica, Queens, myself, who was Korean-American, born and raised in Los Angeles, Rich Velotis, who was a New Yorkerican, who was living in East New York. Mm-hmm. And all of us were in some ways level setting around deeper work around our formation.
Yeah.
And so I think because of that birth, kind of that origin of where it was born and piloted and the conversations and the transformation that really occurred amongst such a diverse population, mm-hmm, I think that's what's led to the accessibility of emotional healthy discipleship globally.
I mean, you're making an interesting claim that's worth exploring. You may or may not be intending to make it, which is, I think we have a tendency, at least maybe I do, or when I talk to people, of thinking about emotional or relational health, mm-hmm, as though it's sort of bound within ethnic categories.
Yes.
So even a lot of the sort of cross-cultural or cross-racial or ethnic conversations you have are about how well in our culture, mm-hmm, dot, 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 dot. So white culture doesn't value,
yeah,
community the way we would as Asians, or, you know, Hispanic culture, we have a way of understanding honor that is different than the way you would as a Brit. Or, and so what you do subtly, whether you intend to or not, is prioritize, create preference, or even negate certain dynamics of how different cultures or ethnicities might have tendencies by way of emotional or relational health. Mm-hmm. Part of the case you're making right now, which you aren't intending to make maybe, is, okay, there's some transcendent principles, mm-hmm, that are kingdom.
Yeah.
And you don't get to take a pass.
Yep.
Well, listen, that's a very individualistic thing. I'm Japanese, so we're going to be more deferential or whatever. You might have a tendency that way.
Yeah.
But then on the opposite side, well, I'm more like a Westerner. I don't know that I'm going to make community central to me or whatever.
Yeah.
You're making a case that there might be a kingdom ethic that transcends sort of ethnic, natural inclination.
Yeah.
Am I saying that right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, but this is where I think Christian theology is, mm-hmm, so unique and beautiful. Mm. Because even in the doctrine of the Trinity, there's a unity of the Godhead, mm-hmm, but there's also the diversity. Of, the, yep, of the Godhead. And different cultures tend to overemphasize one or the other.
Yes.
Either the unity of the Godhead,
yes,
or the diversity of the Godhead.
Yes.
And heresies were actually when someone would lean one way or the other.
Yep.
But somehow within Christian theology, there's a complete kind of melding of the two equally.
Well, mutual submission.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a term we don't quite know, yeah, what to do with.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll give you this example. Like even in the Emotionally Healthy Relationships course.
Yep.
And for leaders, if they go through the School of Emotional Healthy Leadership Part 2.
Yep.
I'll give you an example. There's a couple of skills. Like there's one skill that we call the CTR, mm-hmm, the Community Temperature Reading. Mm-hmm. And it's a skill about confiding in one another.
Yep.
And the way that it's supposed to be practiced is each person, there's a header. There's five different headers, and the first header, which is appreciations, mm-hmm, I first say an appreciation, and then you say an appreciation.
Right.
And then, you know, the next one is a puzzle, and we all, you know, puzzle back and forth. Now, that skill, there are so many different values in that skill, but one of them is that everyone has an equal voice.
Yes.
So, from an Asian background, it makes me feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah, more hierarchical.
Yes. Because yeah. I was the youngest of four. I'm not supposed to have a voice.
Yeah. Everybody else talked.
Yeah.
I agree with one of them. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's deeply uncomfortable for me, yeah, as an Asian person. However, but there's another skill that we have. It's called incarnational listening. Mm. It's about entering into the world of another person.
Yes.
So much so that I'm tuned in. I'm attuned to not only their words, but mm-hmm. their body posture, their movements there.
Yeah.
Now, honestly, as an Asian person, I feel incredibly comfortable with
yeah.
that skill.
Yeah, totally.
Because reading the room,
yeah.
understanding like unspoken things.
Yep.
And being able to really try to listen to understand almost yeah. to the detriment of, I mean, sometimes again, in my culture, in my Korean background, I would almost over anticipate things.
Totally.
And almost assume things about people, even if they told me something different. And
yes,
like that's how much I was incarnating to a loss of myself.
Yeah.
But like that skill, for instance, comes more naturally to me
right.
as an Asian person. So like all of these skills are getting at different areas that if we're growing into the fullness of Christ mm. and the fullness of imaging a God who is both one and diverse, it's kind of like when, you know, Bonhoeffer talks about, you know, if the person can't be in community, you know, they have to beware of being alone.
Yeah.
And then if the person who can't be alone has to beware of being in community.
Yep.
So I think that whole dynamic is mm-hmm. we're trying to hopefully model like the best of Christian theology applied to these various areas of our lives. Now, is it true though that does it, I will admit though, it probably does have tinges of, you know, a Western way.
Sure.
We've wrestled with that because, of course, it was born in North
yes,
America.
Totally.
But there are some principles like for instance, when I talk to Korean pastors mm. in Korea, they will straight up tell me, there's no way we can do Sabbath. We can't.
Right.
That's not.
Can't be done.
Can't
yeah.
be done.
Yeah. Do you not know how important I am?
Yeah.
And how much work there is to do?
Yeah. Right. And,
right. Or I might not have a job.
Yeah.
Like they'll yeah. fire me if, yeah. Right.
So I don't know what to do with that in terms of the culture there.
Totally.
However, this is what I usually say to them. I'm like, listen, I'm Korean American. I'm a workaholic.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure when I read the scriptures, like Sabbath keeping was such a prominent commandment.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the 10. For a people that have been enslaved. And I think of Koreans in our history of recent occupation, we're just a generation removed from Koreans mm-hmm. being occupied by Japan. Like, and I'm like, I just want you to know, like, this practice saved my life, mm. has just allowed me to flourish as a follower of Jesus, mm. as a pastor, as a husband, as a father. And our church has still done okay. like
right.
I'm like,
totally.
Listen, I'm not, we're, it's not like we're saying like we don't want to work hard and, you know,
right.
have things work. So that's where, I don't know. Those are some of the things that I think
really
about.
That's really helpful.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know. We may have never had this conversation.
Yeah.
But I had met Pete at a couple of things
yeah.
and stuff. But the first time I really talked to him was in the lobby at one of your conferences.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the, I don't remember what you called them. Was that New Hope? No. Is that what it was called? What was the conference?
Oh, New City.
New City.
Yeah.
Sorry. And so I meet him there and I'm like, oh, we've met before. You probably don't remember me. Da, da, da. So we're talking. And he said, well, who are you? And I said, well, I'm a Vineyard guy. I wasn't the national director then. He goes, wait a minute, like the Vineyard from Southern California?
Uh-huh.
And I go, yeah. He goes, man, I love this. I would go up to Toronto, this and that. And he goes, so you're a leader in the Vineyard, like the Southern California Vineyard. I go, yeah. And I'm like a little like trying to figure it out. He said, well, I just assumed I couldn't be in the Vineyard if I was going to have a multi-ethnic church.
Wow.
I just thought it was like SoCal. People, I said, oh, let me tell you about the church I'm from, the Columbus Vineyard. It's like this multi-ethnic thing. We're really – he was like, oh, well – I might have changed things. I might have been interested in them. And you're like, that was such a funny conversation.
Yeah.
Well, because he was like, you were like, you know, Hawaiian shirt, you know, acoustic guitar people.
Yeah.
I didn't know. It's like, and he's looking at me like, you're like a tall Indian guy. So anyway, it's just funny how, you know, even our tribes feel like they're locked into
yeah.
particular lanes and, you know. The ECC has been so helpful to us to think about how do you open yourself to these different kinds of conversations. But I think, Drew, the emotional health conversation
mm-hmm.
and then emotionally healthy relationships
mm-hmm.
is such a great tool to engage in these kinds of conversations. Because so much of this sort of cross-cultural or multi-ethnic conversation requires that somehow I have to learn everything about everybody in order to say anything.
Yeah, sure.
Do you know what I mean? So like, if I don't know everything about what it means to be Korean, am I even allowed to talk to you? Like, what are the rules? And then do you have to just, but then you have a hierarchical thing. So since I'm in charge, like how, but if, no, I'm just saying like, so if, do I, how do I, can I get you to talk? But then is that okay? And then, but I'm not even a white guy, but I kind of present in a, you know, all these different weird categories make people just lock up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. And do I, you know, so if I'm a black pastor, do I need to assert myself as a black pastor so that like I belong, all these things, all these exaggerations come into play. But if we have some set of frameworks we're working off, we have a way of saying, no, no, every voice is important. And that's going to be hard for some people.
Yep.
Others, you're going to have to lower yourself in a way that maybe you're not comfortable with.
Yep.
You're going to have to be able to hear feedback in a way that you may or may not be able to solve. And it might not be fair.
Yeah.
But can you hold that space with somebody? The expectations little chart thing. I use that a lot from the EHR stuff. Like, how do you become aware of your expectations?
Right.
How do you communicate those in a way that isn't demanding, but just like, this is where I'm at. This is what I would like. This is what I think should be.
Yeah.
And how do we negotiate that? Because our emotions tend to follow our expectations. All those little tools help jump a lot of barriers. I think it's incredible work.
What if the communities you're building could only be as healthy as you are? Better Together is back, and this year we're going deeper. Join Vineyard USA Associations July 21st through 23rd at North Jersey Vineyard for a transformational gathering where beloved community meets emotionally healthy leadership. Featuring Drew Hyun from Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, you'll discover how to lead from wholeness instead of woundedness and build communities where people don't just attend, they truly belong. This isn't just another conference. It's a reset for your soul and a vision for the community God's called you to lead. Early bird pricing is available through May 4th. So don't wait. Learn more and register today at bettertogether.vineyardusa.org. We'll see you there.